I'm Joe Morgenstern, the film critic of The Wall Street Journal. You can find everything that's right and much of what's wrong with Stranger Than Fiction in the moment when Will Ferrell's lovesick IRS auditor, Harold Crick, gives some flowers to the woman he adores, Anna Pascal. She's played by Maggie Gyllenhaal. Harold's shy joke is that they aren't flowers with a W, but little bags of specialty flowers, because Anna is a bake shop proprietress and an ardent baker, and the subject of an IRS audit. The charm of the moment comes from its emotional charge and the presence of two endearing stars, but the joke is really just a whimsical notion, and the scene is less amusing than self-amused. The same holds true of the film's premise. Harold is an auditor in more ways than one. He keeps hearing a woman's voice in his head, the same one we hear as a voiceover narrator. Soon he realizes that he's a character in a novel, that the voice belongs to the novelist, who's played by Emma Thompson, and that the novel, though still a work in progress, will end with his death, unless he finds some way to save himself. As notions go, this one is intriguing. It's basically about free will. But Harold reminds us of other heroes trapped within invisible surrounds in such movies as The Truman Show, The Matrix, or The Purple Rose of Cairo. The notion is also arbitrary, rather bloodless, and seriously lacking in plausibility, let alone logic. Sometimes I feel trapped within the invisible surround of movies made by products of the self-esteem movement, people who, as children, were told that everything they did was wonderful. This movie seems to be one of them. The director, Mark Forster, and the writer, Zach Helm, are too enchanted with their inventions to bother with supporting details. All the same, Stranger Than Fiction pulls us along in a state of pleasant expectation. Emma Thompson's blocked and frazzled novelist grows funnier as the movie goes on. Maggie Gyllenhaal's magic is the real thing. A rich, expressive voice, a demeanor that can switch instantaneously from rueful to incandescent. Will Ferrell finds all sorts of surprising nuances to relieve Harold's rigidity, which finally dissolves in Anna's glow. For all of the film's narrative intricacies, it's Love and Bloom that carries the day. The full title of Fur is Fur, An Imaginary Portrait of Deanne Arbus. A more unwieldy, though more candid title might have been Fur, What Happened When a Group of Imaginative People Who Couldn't Get the Rights to Deanne Arbus's Photographs Made a Movie About Her Anyway. The result is a curiosity that might have intrigued the late photographer in some perverse way. Arbus, whose parents were in the fur business, had an abiding interest in aberration. But Stephen Schoenberg's handsome, unsettling film is pretty much useless for anyone who wants to understand its subject or hopes to be entertained. Fur starts stylishly and confidently, but the film dwindles down to a surreal chamber piece in a claustrophobic chamber. Enter at your own risk. This sublime nectar is absolutely incapable of lying, says Albert Finney's overripe connoisseur in the preface of A Good Year. He's an expat English wine grower in Haute-Provence, and he's preaching the splendors of the grape to his nephew, a precocious little twit who'll grow up to be a remarkably dislikable London bond trader played by Russell Crowe. This romantic comedy, which was directed by Ridley Scott, is incapable of telling an emotional truth. There isn't a milliliter of honest feeling from start to finish in precious little comedy or romance. A Good Year is sideways gone sour. It's the dregs of faux Provence. I'm Joe Morgenstern, the film critic of The Wall Street Journal, back on KCRW next week with more reviews.